Hello, and welcome to another segment of DSU Inside Perspective. I'm Carlos Holmes, and this is the show where we talk with faculty, staff, students, guests, alumni, about some of the things that are going on in the world and some of the great things that are going on here at Delaware State University. Today, we're going to talk about something that's going on in the world and something we hope that will never go on here at Delaware State University. We're going to talk about opioids. More specifically, the opioid epidemic. And today I have Dr. Aaron Green here, who is a public health official here in the state of Delaware, but more specifically to Delaware State University. He's the collaborating physician for our Student Health Center. Dr. Green, welcome on the show today.
Thank you, Ms. Holmes, for having me.
In talking about opioids, I want to start, though, first of all, talking about what is the threshold for an epidemic? Whether it be an illness or an addiction, what makes something an epidemic?
So generally, we consider an epidemic is when the prevalence of that illness or the incident of some occurrence is happening at a rate that is outside of the norm of that condition. So there's more people and it's happening at the same time. So people are becoming infected or addicted in the case of opioids at a rate that is outside of what would be normally anticipated for that region or area.
Okay. Well, to give this some scale, we had a period of time when we were very concerned about crack cocaine. Was that an epidemic?
It was in the sense that it was in local communities and pockets. This is different. That was more of a pandemic that was in areas of location geographically. This opioid epidemic
has no boundaries. It has reached areas of affluence to poverty. Whether you're in lower socioeconomic class, higher socioeconomic class, it has no respect for any human criteria.
And I guess it's exacerbated by the fact that we're not talking about one type of drug, but we're talking about, the most common, I guess, would be heroin, right?
Heroin is an illicit drug, and most common as an illicit drug.
But it's an opioid.
It's an opioid.
Okay. But what are some of the other type of opioids?
Sure. There's really three broad classes of opioids. One is the naturally occurring, like morphine and codeine. They're derived from the poppy plant, the poppy plant. So those are considered natural. Then you have the semi-synthetic, which they take the plant and they're modified in a lab. Those are semi-synthetic, and that's the oxycodone, oxymorphone. Those are the medications that are modified. And then you have the purely synthetic, which are like fentanyl, Demerol. Those are actually synthetic made, man-made. They don't have a natural origin. They're made from petrochemicals, and they tend to be more potent. For example, fentanyl is 100 times more potent than morphine, 50 times more potent than heroin.
So it seems like we have a challenge here with this. I ask those questions about what are opioids, because I think there are many people out there that have been in the hospital, have had some pain management issues, and they were receiving opioids, but they didn't know that's what it was. I mean, for instance, I had an operation years ago, and I got Demerol.
Yes.
Felt pretty good when I got it, too. But I didn't know it was an opioid. We have a college-age population here, and I had a discussion with our police chief this morning, asking him if there had been any arrests relating to opioids, and he said not a one. He hasn't had one problem with it. Now he says the university's taken some proactive measures to get the antidote. What's the name of that?
Narcan
to have it on in case there's an overdose situation. But it's not happened here at the university. But is this something our students should be concerned with?
Absolutely. We're not immune. I mean, the college campuses are definitely the area where we see less of the opioid crisis occurring. But that age group, that age group from 18 to 25 still represents the highest risk group for using it. And what we find is that they're getting the medication from friends or family most times when they go into the misuse. Their first time using it.
Raiding the medicine cabinet.
So that's one of the sources. And to your point earlier, we've not had any student come to the Student Health Center asking for help or that we suspected of either opioid addiction or withdrawal symptoms.
So we have the illicit, whether it is illegally purchasing them or stealing it from mom, dad's medicine cabinet. And we have those that are actually prescribed by the doctor.
Yes.
Even people that are getting it as a prescription, they're getting addicted.
Yes. Yes, they are. And part of that is the fact that the opioids have a receptor in our body. Our body have receptor sites for opioids. So they occur naturally in our body. We produce endorphins, and there's receptor sites. And the pleasure that's derived from even one dose of an opioid causes a tendency for someone to want to reproduce that feeling. Mm-hmm. And so it has a acting receptor that allows it to perform this euphoric state, and because of that, they tend to want it. And what happens after continued use is there's a dysphoric feeling when you don't have it. So then their drive is to try to remove that discomfort or withdrawal symptoms, and so you've got a cycle.
Well, you know, I was just thinking, you know, opioids are like the internet. We've created something that's kind of, in some ways, gotten out of control.
Mm-hmm.
But with respect to opioids, where does the culpability lie? Does it lie with the doctors? Does it lie with the pharmaceuticals that are creating this drug? Mm-hmm. Does it lie with the distributors, the middle-level distributors? Does it lie with the federal government? Where does we need to attack this problem, and we need to really figure out where we have gone astray here. Where does the blame lie?
And I think in all of the instances that you just mentioned, there is ample blame to go around. But there are some particularly shameful kinds of distributions by pharmaceutical companies to pharmacies that we've seen that should have been regulated, that someone should have, a flag should have been raised to say, how can you be distributing this amount in a community that's smaller than the demographics of the amount of medicines that you're giving? So people are coming from outside of the communities to come to pharmacies, which, you know, flag should be raised. There should be a threshold for which a pharmacy can do it. Our physicians also are victims of overprescribing. I think that they've so the blame and government, can they do more? Absolutely. So there's a lot of room for improvement. Mm-hmm. But also, I think we have to do things from the grassroots levels and informing people about the fact that most of these drugs are coming from friends and families, and so people are not necessarily getting them all illicitly.
So I got to ask, you know, the physical part of this, what is it that opiates do physically to the body?
Mm-hmm.
And what is it that happens if you abuse them physically?
Mm-hmm.
If you abuse them, what happens physically that puts you in a dangerous situation that could result in death?
And it's primarily because of where the receptors are bounded. The opioids bind to receptors that give you a feeling of euphoria. They give you a feeling of relaxation, of being in control. Mm-hmm. So they kind of falsify a state of constant okayness, that you're all right, but the truth is that you aren't. So the abuse part is that over time the tolerance develops to create, and then you do take more and more and more, and one tends to take higher dosages. And what is the deadliest part is when people try to get off, and when they come back, they tend to go back to where they left off. That dose is overwhelming for the respiratory system, so it causes respiratory depression. Most people that die from heroin, it's a cause of respiratory. So the lungs just basically relax, and they're not pumping, and so you're not getting oxygen to the brain and to the rest of the body and the heart.
The Trump administration has been so advised this is an epidemic. Is the response of the federal government enough at this point?
I think verbally it has been good to have the dialogue. I think it's good that the narrative is in the public's eye, but I think that there's more that can be done, both from a grassroots level and awareness level, and in terms of treatment facilities and programs that allow people to get off. But I think the other thing that isn't being done is that there are people that aren't prepared to quit. And I think we have to deal with those people in terms of clean needles, having access to syringes and things, because they're just people who aren't going to quit. But there's huge consequences from HIV, hepatitis C, hepatitis B, from those who aren't prepared to quit.
According to some 2016 statistics, $504 billion in economic cost from these issues with opioids. It's something we got to address, right?
Absolutely. The hospital emergency rooms and such are full.
Dr. Green, we could talk more about this, but we're just about out of time. Thank you so much for being on DSU Inside Perspective. And thank you for joining us for another segment of the show. We'll see you next time.